Welcome to the Ogletree Deacons Podcast, a quick digest of compelling legal issues and practical insights delivered to you in less than 20 minutes.
Hello, everyone, and thank you for joining us for the Ogletree Deacons Podcast. My name's Lisa Burton, and I'm a shareholder in the Boston office. Here with me today is Lee Ganchin. Lee is a shareholder in our Houston office. Today, we'll be talking about recent developments. So let's begin with just talking about what the law requires. The law requires that all employers complete I-9s for new hired employees within a certain period of time after hire. The requirements include reviewing documentation that prove an individual's identity and authorization to work in the United States. Employers are expected to have a good faith belief that the employees they employ are eligible to work, and employers are required to use E-Verify if they're federal contractors or in specific states. So Lee, let's start by talking a little bit more about which division within ICE enforces compliance and what that looked like in 2018.
Sure. So ICE enforces these I-9 compliance laws through the Homeland Security Investigations Division, and they refer to themselves as the Worksite Enforcement Unit specifically. It is the principal investigative arm of the Department of Homeland Security, and they are also responsible for investigating transnational crime or threats. So it seems a little bit intimidating when an employer thinks about having to stay compliant for basically properly completing I-9 forms with this type of agency, with this type of investigative authority, but that is who you will be working with. Now, generally across the nation, they're very well staffed and they're very clearly divided between sub-offices over 200 cities. There are about 126 officers located through 30 offices or field divisions. They also have created a more central office, which is the Employer Compliance Inspection Center. And this is a center that houses approximately 285 ICE personnel comprised of auditors, special agents, contractors, mission support staff, and ICE attorneys, and contractors who help to audit I-9 forms when there are surges of enforcement activity across the nation. So, Lisa, I know in recent history, in 2018, there was a marked increase in this investigation and compliance activity that Homeland Security Investigations was doing. Do you have some numbers for us?
I do. 2018 saw a marked increase from 2017, the year before. And what made it so noteworthy is that during the fiscal year, which runs from October 1st till September 30th of the following year, for 2018, we saw ICE open 6,848 worksite investigations, which was an increase of over 404%. They also started 5,981 I-9 audits, which are where employers get notices of inspection and they are going to have their records audited. That saw an increase of 439%. There were also 779 criminal arrests, which was an increase of over 560%, and 1,525 administrative arrests, which is an increase of 886% over 2017. Now, we don't know what the numbers are going to be like for 2019, but clearly for 2018, there were significant increases. And I think it's important to note that what we're talking about isn't what everyone's seeing in the press with regard to the arrest of illegal aliens or what's happening at our border. These are all with regard to what's happening to employers and employees in the workplace. Lee, what about what's happening? What are you seeing this year?
So that's very true. This is quite different than what you often see on the news about apprehensions at the border or arrest and deportation of individuals that have been in the United States for a long time. In terms of an employer receiving a notice of inspection, which means the government now will expect that employer to turn over all of their I-9 documents and prove that they've been compliant. And if they haven't, there is the likelihood of being assessed civil penalties. What we do know about this year so far is that there has definitely been a surge in enforcement and service of these notices to employers over the summer. And in May of this year, the Worksite Enforcement Unit reported that it had a backlog of 2,174 I-9 cases nationwide due to that surge of enforcement. This prompted them to request budget authorization to hire about 27 new, what they call junior compliance officers, to support field offices. So it's pretty significant. And this tells us that employers really need to start working on their compliance before the government becomes involved, so you can do it at your own pace and not at the chaotic pace that gets started when the government does serve the notice. Employers, speaking of fines, often ask us, what are the threat of fines? What kind of fines can I expect? And they hear a lot about criminal prosecution. Can you just touch on those for us, Lisa?
Sure. So turning to what can happen, and as you noted, there's both the concept of civil fines as well as criminal penalties. Now, the civil fines really deal with the, for lack of a better word, paper compliance. It talks about whether or not an employer is completing the I-9s in a timely manner and is doing so sufficiently that they are completing the forms so that people clearly are authorized to work in the United States. And the fines, they have a complicated matrix that how they get assessed, and there are different weighting factors that are constantly being adjusted and also can differ depending on where you are coming from as far as in the region. But generally, the knowing employment of an illegal alien could have a fine of up to $4,384 per defective form. And there's a form for, remember, each and every person who you employ. There are also paperwork violations is up to $2,191 per defective form. And what's interesting is when you look at the notices, defective forms can have the failure to complete a section or checking the wrong box in the translator section. So it's not necessarily things that you would think of as a glaring error, but they are technical in that the paperwork has not been completed exactly as the government and ICE expects you to complete it. The other civil type of penalty that can happen really deals with debarment or suspension, particularly for federal contractors. And those issues could be with regard to applications that can get processed, as well as participation in government contracts. So those can be significant and can clearly add up. And I think we have been seeing significant fines being levied once you get those notices. It's also important to note that once the notice of inspection is completed, ICE can, but is not required, to give you an opportunity to try and fix some of the defects that are fixable, and will provide you generally 10 days to do so. So that's all on the, for lack of a better word, civil side. Turning to the criminal side, however, ICE has been much more active and threatening in the context of criminal enforcement. And when we talk about criminal enforcement, we really are talking about ICE believing that there first could be a pattern and practice of hiring undocumented individuals. That generally is going to be a misdemeanor. However, it gets much more serious when you are starting to get to what may be deemed harboring or encouraging or inducing somebody to be in the United States. And that could involve having noticed that somebody should be in the United or shouldn't be in the United States working that you are employing and failing to take action. And those criminal penalties can involve forfeiture of assets as well as other penalties. And then, of course, there's a last part
that employers should take very seriously, and that really is making the false attestation on the Form 9, which can involve both crimes of perjury and visa fraud. The question about that becomes significant because the forms themselves require attestations by both the employee and the employer. And those attestations are being signed under the penalties of perjury. And I think we have seen, and I'd love your opinion, Lee, many more times starting out in the process with raising the specter of criminal sanctions rather than talking first about just the civil sanctions.
Yes. Well, we see ICE or Homeland Security investigations looking for some specific things in employers that it decides to ultimately press charges in criminal court against. And they will look for things of mistreatment of workers, identification fraud, identity theft, visa fraud, and money laundering, tax, financial fraud, things like that. They are also going to look for, because of sometimes when you do review the documents, it is difficult to tell whether the person has given you a fake document. There are good ones out there. And one of the keys to being subject to criminal prosecution is if it becomes apparent that the employer is willfully blind to the presence of such documents. And so it's really important to have objective review of your process and your documents and lots of training to make sure that the government, when they do audit your forms, doesn't begin to get the feeling that a reasonable person should have known by looking at these documents that there was some kind of identity theft going on or document fraud that was being basically just lived with in the workplace, because they can certainly make a bigger criminal case out of that if they begin to feel that something's up along those lines. And speaking of that is another issue related to how our compliance audits started in the first place. How did my company get selected for an audit or an investigation? And of course, the Homeland Security Investigations Office has told us that, of course, they will go back to people and companies they have already audited and check them again. So if you are someone who's been given a warning notice and you've been told that we may come back in 6 months or some other period of time, you should take that seriously. It may not be just a one-time visit. You may be audited multiple times. The government also will take seriously tips that it receives, credible tips through its tip line. There, of course, is a phone number, but there's also a very easily accessed tip line online on the ICE website. And we see everything from disgruntled employees to maybe disgruntled competitors sending in tips for ICE to maybe check out the compliance status of an employer. So that's another way they pick up tips and decide to investigate further or serve a notice of inspection. And then, of course, other agencies within the government might also have information that lead them to believe that perhaps this is an employer that may not be doing the right thing regarding compliance. And that relates to Department of Labor, if there's been a wage and hour investigation, the NLRB or the EEOC. They can also provide tips to Homeland Security investigations.
Remember not to forget about the recent spate of mismatch letters and the trends we're seeing there.
Yes, definitely. And I was going to touch on that because that is another way that audits can be triggered. And it's definitely another way to consider the interplay between receiving a letter, which very often happens in your payroll department. So you may not actually get the letter in HR. You may have to check with payroll. And Social Security now will send an initial letter explaining to the employer that there are a series of names and Social Security numbers that you have reported that do not match up in their system. And it certainly can be something very harmless, like you wrote the wrong number down, or you wrote it backwards, or you got one digit wrong. And it's definitely important not to jump the gun and call the employee in and assume the worst. You should not do that. You should simply provide them with the information after you've checked your own to be sure that you did record exactly what the employee gave to you initially. And if that's correct, then you can have a discussion with the employee about what their records show. And perhaps all they need to do is go to Social Security themselves and have the record corrected and report back to you. However, sometimes in that situation, the employee will actually self-report and will tell the employer, you know what, that wasn't an accurate number. It doesn't belong to me. It's not a real number. And I don't have work authorization. And employers often ask us, what do we do then? And in that case, you simply have to ensure that they understand that you are not permitted to employ somebody who doesn't have work authorization. You need to ensure that they understand what the documents are. You can show them the document list, list A or B and C, and have them be sure that they have explored all avenues, because sometimes some people do have an avenue for work authorization. They just didn't fully understand it because immigration law can be quite complex. If they have taken that path and they still don't have anything, then the employer is not permitted to continue to employ this person. And if they do, then they will be subject to very high fines and possible prosecution along the criminal lines. And so when you get a mismatch letter and there are a significant number of names on it, that is something that would be a red flag and that you do need to orchestrate very carefully and compliantly in how you address those.
I know that I've had a situation where clients read the letter and get confused because the letters will suggest that this isn't a basis for saying somebody isn't authorized to work. However, ICE, I think, is now taking the position, though, if you get the notice and you don't have a transcription error and you reach out to the individual employee to try and clarify, you have to follow up on that, because if you don't, they may deem it knowingly breaking the law if you can't explain the discrepancy and they're not getting any clarification.
So, Lisa, let's talk about a few top things that employers should have on their list of things to do or maybe even not to do with regard to I-9 compliance. I think, first of all, the first thing that's really important is management. You've got to have a process for completing your I-9s that includes making sure that your frontline I-9 team is responsible and they know what to do with the I-9 form in all of its configurations, depending on which documents are presented and what the status of the employee is, and understanding how they should respond in that variety of situations. Knowing that your team is well-trained is so important, and having them have the sense of a process that is consistent is also very important. Checking up on that regularly is also good, because we see this very often, that you train your team one way and then gradually one person begins to fill out the form in a certain way that's incorrect. It is not malicious or anything negative. It's just human nature. And they continue on in that bad habit. And so it's very good for you to spot check and sometimes audit, to be sort of that objective eye to make sure that everything is being done correctly and put your team back on the correct path when they might have strayed a bit. So Lisa, what are your thoughts on another common question we get? Should the employer copy the supporting documents or not copy them?
Well, my view is that it is important to copy them for a number of reasons. One, it allows the employer, if there is an internal audit and you realize that there are some errors, you have the ability to go fix them as part of the audit process. And in fact, the guidance does provide a mechanism that if you have found out something is wrong, you can edit the documents provided you leave an audit trail. Suggestions are you cross out what is an error, you correct it, and then you initial it. So I think if you don't have copies of the documents, you can't do that. Also, if you're an E-Verify employer, which you know ICE itself recommends that employers use E-Verify as a best practice, that requires copying certain documents that are going to be used as part of that process. But Lee, tell me what you think about the issues with regard to either remote employees as well as onboarding large groups of employees.
Well, remote employees, I think that is the hot topic today for sure. We are asked about this all of the time, and it really presents a big management challenge for sure. One thing, though, the big thing to remember about remote employees is that you cannot review their documents remotely. Even though we have wonderful technology, we have great video options on our computers and beautiful, crystal clear digital, there is no circumstance that the government will allow you to review an employee's documentation remotely and sign off on Section 2 of the I-9. It's just never allowed. The government has specifically said you must actually touch the document that they give you in your hands because there are some tactile features, security features on the form that the government wants the employer or the employer representative to be able to feel. And of course, the holograms have to show up when the card is turned from side to side. And you can't do that if you're just looking through a computer or a camera or something similar to that. So the big reminder is don't be tempted to review a remote employee's document online. And then with regard to large number of employees, the same thing, you simply cannot take shortcuts. You are signing your form, if you will read Section 2 again, under penalty of perjury. It's like you're sitting in a witness stand with your hand raised. So you can't take shortcuts in that regard either. You have to make a plan and follow through. You can use electronic I-9 systems if they are compliant, and that will lighten the burden. However, other shortcuts are not recommended at all. And in terms of electronic systems, there is the E-Verify system that is still optional nationwide on a federal basis, unless you are a federal contractor and your contract requires you to participate in E-Verify. But Lisa, what are some other considerations about E-Verify that we should know?
I think when you're considering E-Verify, remember that it is not a perfect system. There are ways that it can be still manipulated and there are significant mismatches that can occur. And the other issue with regard to E-Verify, again, is with regard to the retention of the documents and how quickly you need to complete the E-Verify. Some employers think if they're doing E-Verify, they are somehow excused of completing the I-9s. That is not, in fact, the case. These are separate processes. And so you still must complete the I-9 in a timely manner. I think the last takeaways would be remember to make sure people aren't engaging what would be called document abuse. Some folks, to make it easy, may ask that everybody show a passport or some other document. That would be considered document abuse and is not allowed. And so requiring employees to bring certain documents would be a problem. And the last thing I think I would say is remember that if you get internal tips or internal processes, you need to pay attention and you need to take steps. So the best thing is to have a policy or practice that you follow and do it consistently in all situations. I think this makes the end of our program. And we thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us on the Ogletree Deacons Podcast. You can subscribe to our podcasts on iTunes or through your favorite podcast service. And remember, the information in this podcast is for informational purposes only and is not to be construed as legal advice.